may run home for a long time. Run home for a long time. You may run home for a long time. Let me tell you, God Almighty's gonna cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go tell that midnight rider. Tell the gambler, rambler, backbiter. Tell him God Almighty's gonna cut him down. Stop, God Almighty, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet from the midnight dews. Cause I've been down on my bended knees, talking to the man from Galilee. My God, he spoke so sweet. I thought I heard the ruffle of angels' feet. He put his hand upon my head. Great God Almighty, let me tell you what he said. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go tell that midnight rider. Tell the gambler, rambler, backbiter. Tell him God Almighty's gonna cut him down. You may throw a rock.
Alrighty. Tell him God Almighty's gonna cut him down. That's the celebrated soprano and recitalist Jessie Mae Norman with God's Gonna Cut You Down. We hear her performing this Negro spiritual, as it was called, live in Berlin in 2010. The same year, she released her incredible album, Roots, My Life, My Song. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And yes, there's a certain application, I must say, of that song with our topic today as we reveal yet another chapter in this saga involving the Clintons and their foundation and related matters. Bill and Hillary Clinton, veteran survivors of many personal and political battles and scandals, won't come out of their current predicament unscathed. Their magic formula: deny everything, accuse their accusers, and feed fresh meat to the hounds at their heels, doesn't seem to be working. They're smack dab at the center of multiple criminal investigations, any one of which could lead them and their co-conspirators to doing serious time. The Clintons, fast running out of legal options and wiggle room on possible federal charges, may just play their biggest, pardon the pun, Trump card. What is that? It's throwing former President Barack Obama under the proverbial bus and unmasking his alleged knowledge of and role in their unparalleled unlawful schemes. Well, we have been guided through the labyrinth of the Clinton Foundation and its related entities, all of which are in one way or the other outside of the law, and revealing that the whole Clinton complex of interrelated projects and companies and charity work, it's all part of an elaborate plan to set up a private slush fund. And the person who walked us through this in its fine details, we've been doing this now for 2 years, is Charles Ortel, whose own independent probe has led him to call the Clinton Foundation and its network of spin-off nonprofit organizations, quote, the largest unprosecuted charity fraud in world history. So he's here to talk about his latest findings and the latest developments, but we also want to reveal this new aspect of what is possible, what can be coming down the pike If the Clintons want to make a desperate move to save themselves. Charles, great to have you as usual.
Trace, it's my honor to be back on.
Well, what do you think about this little theory I just outlined, that the Clintons might just develop a tactic of distraction, massive distraction, and would find a way to embroil Barack Obama in their craziness, and he may just be, in fact, involved, but this would buy them much needed time and perhaps even leniency as they now introduce this new element in this scandal, Barack Obama, and what he might have known and how he might have protected Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton over the years and staved off any investigation, any probe, because he too might have been part of it. Is this a crazy, harebrained idea?
Well, I don't think it's crazy or harebrained. I think, though, that what we need to consider here is that this isn't an internecine fight just involving the Democratic Party. We have Donald Trump in the White House. We have Republicans in control of the House and the Senate. And I think what we're looking at here is it has now become a far bigger scandal than just the Clinton Foundation, because I think it also shows us and touches what actually happened. I hesitate to use that phrase. What happened in 2016, in the election 2015-2016, and then causes us to go back and say, now wait a minute, if the wheels of justice, if the organs of the IRS, if prosecutors have been gained by, let's say, in part the Clintons and maybe in part the Obamas and maybe, who knows, in part the Bush family, if what we have been watching here for lo these many years, and one could argue back 30 years, is a game where politically connected people are quite happy to give a lot of money to a president and his team so that they either get favors back from the government, avoid prosecution for crimes past and ongoing, or both. And that what we may have been watching here is an elaborate shell game where the masses were not suspicious enough, and the politically connected people on both sides of the aisle were incredibly dirty. And I think we're beginning to see that. We're beginning to see the true contours of the scandal. The Clinton Foundation scandal began before Barack Obama was very much involved in politics on October 23rd, 1997. So at this point, I think the Clintons may understand this. They may not want to believe it. They're going down. And I don't see a way out for them to avoid being tagged with criminal behavior. I do see, arguments maybe coming to light that, if they could maybe get some measure of leniency, but, to say that to target the Obama administration for obstructing justice, let's say, to protect the Clintons, doesn't, negate the fact that this is the largest unprosecuted set of charity frauds in world history, and it's ongoing. It just means that Obama's potential, if he and his people were involved in this, that, there'd be extra room needed in whatever jail cells may be made available for the participants. It's not a solution.
But look at it this way. I mean, I've raised this question before. I just don't see, I don't have any blisteringly incontrovertible proof about it, but I'm just going on the basis of logic. Much, especially in the later years, much of the craziness of the Clinton Foundation had an attachment to Hillary Clinton's role as Secretary of State. As Secretary of State, she was functioning as a cabinet-level member in the Obama administration. All these things are going down during the Obama administration. All these trips, all this, these air miles running here and there all over the world. Clearly, because I raised a question, how does she go all over the place without a stated mission? She comes back, she makes no report at all as to what was accomplished, what was the need to go to these places, these out-of-the-way places, where ostensibly the United States did not have a diplomatic interest or diplomatic need at the moment that she decided to take off. And by the way, her entourage included her daughter. It looked like a nice family outing every time she went. They stayed in the best hotels and so forth, and Hillary Clinton comes back. The inspector general does not exist in her State Department, so there's nobody acting as a counterbalance. But all of this is happening under Barack Obama's nose. And it is incomprehensible to me that no one suspected that there were major irregularities going on at the State Department, including a missing $9 million, which has not yet been accounted for in the budget. So it suggests to me, and just this is just my thinking, Obama either was part of it or knew of it and did nothing, because it should have been his administration to initiate an investigation. It should have been his administration calling the Clintons into account. And none of that occurred. But on the other side of the ledger, we have Hillary Clinton literally trucking Obama around like, you know, show and tell. He's my buddy, she says, as she's preparing to run for president. He sits there like a numb head. He says nothing except, yes, you know, I'm supporting Hillary, blah, 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 and he makes nice. But by then, the Obamacare had gone through, which was a gift to the insurance industry, a gift to the healthcare industry, and organized arbitrarily. Nobody asked Hillary Clinton to take this on. She appointed herself as a member of his cabinet in charge of health care. She selectively chooses the members of these industries that clearly have an interest in how things were going to turn out. She authors this outrageous document that is introduced for a vote in the dead of night, where many of the legislators had already gone home. It was a bill 6+ feet tall, and they had about half an hour to vote for it, and they voted for it. So it suggests to me that Obama cannot claim here that he didn't know, he didn't suspect. It was his FBI that should have been looking at it. It was his Justice Department that should have been looking into the Clintons. And all of the hints were there and screaming that something irregular was going on. No response from the Obama administration. So either they had something on Obama, or Obama volunteered himself for service with the idea that short-term promises will yield long-term gains for him and his wife, and they'll just proceed with the assumption that Hillary Clinton couldn't possibly lose the election. They had it in the bag. The Democrats had things in place, and unfortunately, Donald Trump came and upset the entire apple cart. So I'm going on the basis of that. I've asked you this before, what you're thinking about that. I cannot see how Barack Obama did not know his administration, his Justice Department, his FBI, had no clue what the Clintons were doing, his IRS. Even as they were chasing after the Tea Party and smashing other candidates in the head and trying to destroy the election prospects. But I have no reason to believe that Barack Obama is a total innocent here, and that the Clintons, because this is their habit, when they get into deep trouble, they don't mind turning on their friends. So it is possible that we will see Barack Obama being charged by the Clintons, saying, you know, by innuendo, saying, well, you know, clearly we were okay, because if anything, the Obama administration would have caught any crimes we allegedly committed, and they found nothing. They found no reason to question us. They found no reason to indict us. They found no reason to look even more closely at our wonderful foundation. So you can't say that there's no reason to believe that during the Obama years, that the Clinton Foundation was running afoul of the law. What say you, Charles?
All right. Well, what I would say is I think we have to go back before Obama to see the answer to this question emerge. And I say that because the Clintons, certainly in Bill's two presidential campaigns, developed the art of opposition research, took it to you know, developed, in quotes, the art of opposition research, putting together files and you know, on all their enemies and rivals. And then for 8 years, you know, Bill and Hillary and their team was inside the White House. And who knows exactly how many files were actually retrieved. I mean, where the number, I think it's 400 or 500 that was admitted to. But do we really believe that's the only files that were retrieved? With this mysterious group that manages to lose billing records and important evidence until just after the statute of limitations is passed. I mean, these are people who play fast and loose with the rules, the Clintons. And so the first set of questions I have around why wasn't the Clinton Foundation investigated, and this is a shameless plug, are addressed in a piece that's up on Polyzet right now, asking just this question. We know there was an FBI investigation opened by February 2001 under the Bush administration into the Clinton Foundation. We know that it lasted for 4 years. We know that Bob Mueller was head of the FBI from September 4th, 2001. We know that James Comey was the lead U.S. attorney on the Southern District from February of 2002 until sometime in 2003 when he was promoted to the position that Rod Rosenstein now has, the person who actually runs the Justice Department, the Deputy Attorney General. So we also know that Christopher Wray was involved in the Justice Department from 2003 to 2005 in a position where he decided which had a major role to say in which matters were federally prosecuted. And we know that Rod Rosenstein was involved in the Justice Department from 2001 to 2005 deciding which tax matters, which tax fraud should be prosecuted. So why did these gentlemen, all four of them, fail to see the obvious that it's evidence in FBI files that are available for the public? In my story, there's a link to the site where you can read the evidence for yourself, and you can look at all the work that I and others have done about the Clinton Foundation. It was an obvious fraud, and there was a grand jury, more than one grand jury convened in this time frame. There was an FBI. There were teams around the country and indeed in foreign locations looking at this. They had reams of inside information. They should have been able to see this under Bush, and yet they didn't. And the fraud, you know, a decision was made not to prosecute just after the 2004 elections, and the matter dropped, and then the Clintons, you know, went hog wild. The fraud escalated from 2005 right the way through the general election in 2008. So the Clintons have this long history, I think, of gaining access to valuable, actionable material, using it against their enemies, using it to let their friends off. And they were playing for keeps. They were playing for the whole McGilla. Yet the upstart, Barack Obama, beat Hillary decisively early on, humiliated her, I would argue. And I think, you know, the contours of what really happened during the Obama presidency likely were hatched in a meeting that occurred in June of 2008, one of Dianne Feinstein's mansions in Washington, D.C. I think she has another one in California. where CNN and many others report that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton had a private meeting after it was clear she was not going to be the candidate, and some sort of a deal was hatched out, in my view. At that point, the world did not yet know how weak a candidate John McCain would be. The world did not yet know how hard the global economy would be knocked. But the one thing that was certain in June of 2008 is to get across the line, the Democrats needed money, and the Clintons were one way of getting that money together. So you're absolutely right to note, in my view, and I have the same concerns. You know, it's one thing to say Hillary Clinton had retained, a Gmail account, sent the odd Gmail around while she was, the bulk of her correspondence was going on secure accounts, secure devices via secure servers. The complete opposite happened here, and we're losing, we get lost in the weeds because we get misdirected by the Clintons. What really happened here is that all of her communications not only were sent via private servers, not only were sent using unsecure devices, all of her communications were retained until after she deigned to give some of them back on December 5th, 2014, which is, 21 months or so after she left her final day as Secretary of State. So for, almost 6 years, accounting, the earliest communications, to up to almost 2 years after she left, This team kept control of presidential records. These are records that belong in the National Archives for historians to study. And in addition, as you rightly point out, there was no Inspector General sitting on top of the Secretary of State or the Department of State while Hillary was Secretary of State. Did nobody notice that? I can understand. No Inspector General for like a month. That I get. I can even understand it for 5 months or 6 months, but not for 4 years. And not in addition, when we know that senior members of the, that at least one member of the Secretary of the Department of State was very concerned about these arrangements. And lots of people got emails from Hillary Clinton and others. And I'm no tech expert, but before I open an email, I check to see who it's from. Because I don't want to get fished. I don't want to get, open malware. Don't tell me that people who are far more involved in this, who have much more staff. I have no staff, but people who have staffs and, a whole bunch of people holding their hands. Don't tell me she didn't know, and Barack Obama didn't know, that Hillary Clinton was exclusively using this private server arrangement. So somebody had to approve it. Now, maybe it wasn't Barack Obama himself. Maybe it was Valerie Jarrett. But somebody very senior had to approve this and allow it to keep going. And then let's talk about, the number of people in the Obama administration who used aliases. I think this team may have been naive enough to believe that they could circumvent the law by creating alias accounts and communicating using these alias accounts, either in emails that were sent or via, looking at drafts and tailoring drafts back and forth, so you're not technically sending anything. Don't tell me that, no grown-up in the room didn't think about that and say, come on, this is transparent fraud. You can't evade the Freedom of Information Act. You can't operate like this. You're the President of the United States. You're the Secretary of State. You're senior cabinet people. You must obey the laws that you're sworn to uphold and enforce, on behalf of all the American people. So I think what we have here, you're right to say, it's not just Hillary Clinton and her missing emails. It's these patterns and the patterns and practices that occurred under the 8-year period when Barack Obama was president, and the fact that, for all his support, maybe we can start with Lois Lerner. We don't need to get into all the other ones. Just, the abuse weaponizing the IRS against conservatives. Turning the IRS into a place where they won't go after left-leaning groups, or allies of the Obamas and the Clintons. Just that alone, for far less than that, I think it was Chuck Colson in the Watergate era went to prison for far less than this. And, I actually think the more I muse on this, that a more likely scenario would be that Obama's people might come forward and say, we would like to have, for Michelle and for others, a political future. The Democratic landscape is wide open, and we're young. The Clintons are not so young. Far smarter for representatives of the Obamas to turn on the Clintons and say, we were pressured. We didn't know what we were getting into. We found ourselves in this tough place. Yes, we made mistakes, but here are the real, we could give you the real dirt on the Clintons.
I don't see that that could happen without the Obamas having to admit their role in some really shady stuff. Because don't forget, in the meantime that all of this stuff was occurring, you had related things that appeared to have benefited the Clintons appeared to have benefited from protection of the Obama administration. Number one, Benghazi. This was about shipping guns and weapons. This was an ongoing effort. This was purely a Hillary Clinton endeavor. She has yet to explain what happened there. And as I said, we don't hear a discussion about the billions of dollars in solid gold bricks in Libya's treasury that went missing. And was that part of Hillary Clinton's plan that the assassination of Muammar Gaddafi would also assist the ultimate plan to just take the money, take the gold? We don't know. But we do know that we see a pattern here in which the State Department and the U.S., Valerie Jarrett and others, went before the United Nations and lied. They came before the United States, the people of the U.S., and lied and said this was about a film that caused an incredible negative reaction. And that wasn't the case at all. So we have a number of things involving Hillary Clinton. We came, we saw, he died. Ha, 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 ha. When it's clear that she planned this whole thing, it didn't seem to warrant any deep inquiries within the Obama administration as to what the heck happened there.
Bringing that up.
We have too many unanswered questions that suggest that the Clintons used, and I'm not saying that the Obamas were total innocent here. President Obama was a total innocent, but the kind of relationship they had with each other, the Clintons were exceptionally predatory and conniving, and managed to fulfill their own private agendas and the agendas of other people around the world using the resources of the United States. So I don't see how that necessary investigation just got postponed or not even dealt with. The role of the Clintons in getting the Obama administration not only to extend its resources, military and otherwise, in their own private endeavors, which goes to the business of the slush fund, the pay-to-play, because a lot of the countries that Hillary Clinton visited, there was, at least, there was no explained reasons. There were no explained reasons for her having to go to these countries. And my theory was that she was doing her own business. She was doing the Clinton thing with the protection of the Obama administration at all levels. And why that remained investigated is a made question to me.
Well, so we're hypothesizing, but we may never know. But I think the relevant period to think about is say, early June 2008, to January 20th, 2009. That's the period between which Barack Obama emerged as a Democratic candidate and then took on McCain and won the election and then had to be inaugurated. In that period, the Clintons put the power move against the Obamas, and it must have been a whopper of something that managed to give the Clintons leverage. You know, without going into into La La Land, one way in which I think there might have been leverage exerted was to hypothesize that the Democrats needed cash. And the Clintons had, in the Clinton Foundation, particularly in 2008, when a large donor, Unitaid, spent in that year $140 million alone, but in addition, advanced money from out years into 2008. So they gave him extra money in 2008, the election year. It is highly likely to me that the Clintons scammed money from their foundation to help fund the general election campaign and help that, you know, led to Barack Obama's victory. That having been done, they would have made Barack Obama's people aware of, you know, where the money came from. And then they would have had enormous leverage on the incoming administration to make a simple choice. Do you want us, you know, we can just say you're not going to be the next president, you know, because this will come to light. Or you could be the president, but if you're the president, you have to protect us in the foundation. That, to me, is a kind of trade that seems, certainly if we have any line people left who can look at this in the FBI, that's something that really needs to be looked hard at, particularly given the revelations this morning about Uranium One that came out from testimony by the confidential witness yesterday, Mr. Campbell, talking about how I think $150 million or so was sent towards the Clinton Foundation various ways by Frank Juicer's Canadian gentleman and by the Russians and others in 2008, 2009, and 2010. So, you know, we really need to look very hard at the evidence that's out there. And that could be, you know, one whopping mess that the Obama people, once they took the poison chalice, the money from the Clintons, to win the election, they couldn't open it up. And then, you know, it's such a glaring and obvious fraud. We've been talking about it for 2 years. Think of the number of people inside the IRS, inside Justice, and elsewhere who saw this fraud as well and may have been thinking, you know, presidents come and go, secretary of states come and go. A lot of people here have done some very, very bad things. And we now have leverage over the president. We have leverage over Hillary Clinton. You know, it would suit us a lot to see Hillary Clinton as president, because for the next 8 years, you could imagine these crooked people thinking, you know, our friends, suddenly our low-level public service pay, it doesn't look so bad because we have enormous leverage that will be valuable to crooked people inside and outside this country. That's why I say this is, you know, a case of corruption, it seems, that is so gigantic that the ordinary person would just say, well, you know, I mean, it can't be that bad, when it is that bad. I mean, that just to digress a little bit, that's sort of what allowed GE to get away with what it did for so long. It was so big, everyone assumed that somebody was regulating it somewhere, and that if there really were problems, they would have come to light. You ignore the obvious problems. That's what's happened, I think, here on a much bigger scale. But back on the ones, you did ask a question about Benghazi. In the last week or so, the virtual reading room at the State Department has released a bunch of new emails, one of which I happened to look at. Hysterical. It's sad and hysterical. It's dated September 11th. It's to Hillary. September 11th, 2012. It's from memory around 4 p.m. Eastern Time, which would have been, you know, while the battles were raging in Libya and in Egypt and elsewhere. It's from from memory, Hannah Rickert, but I may have the name wrong. It's a message from somebody in charge of arranging the Clinton Global Initiative meeting that was to be like 10 days later. Good news. Mohamed Morsi, the then president, controversial president of Egypt, has decided to attend the Clinton Global Initiative meeting. So, you know, that news comes in, you know, at a time period where, you know, no one seems to know what Hillary and Barack Obama were actually doing that evening. But, you know, the leverage that Mohamed Morsi would have over the Obama administration must have been massive. I mean, in June, he had been saying, prior to the November election, he'd been saying in his first speech as newly installed president of Egypt, he said that his number one priority was freeing the blind sheik, the man who had blown up the World Trade Center the first time and sits in prison, sat in prison in the United States. Kind of tough to win re-election as president of the United States if you're responsible for toppling the entire Middle East, toppling a friend in Hosni Mubarak, and installing a radical firebrand who is now going to, you know, agitate to get this diabolical fiend who tried to blow up the World Trade Center the first time released in the middle of an election contest against Mitt Romney. That's going to be hard. That's going to be a tough nut. So, you know, the real story on Benghazi and on imprisoning this guy, I don't know if he's still in prison, who made the video. You're telling your daughter on this contemporaneously on the 11th of September, oh, yeah, we know it's a bad al-Qaeda-style terrorist that did this. The next day you're telling the entire world, and on the Sunday talk shows a few days later, the entire world, all this is because of the video. And, you know, how many idiots, frankly, in the mainstream press bought that story? How many flaming idiots bought that story? How many flaming idiots still buy that story? You know, it's quite a saga of stuff that's coming out now, and it seems like the pace of revelations is quickening, not slowing.
Well, here's the question. In the meantime, we don't see a deeper diving into some of the key players here, including James Comey, including the head of the FBI, including the role of investigative bodies like the IRS. Are we clear about how many investigations are concurrent right now? I came up with five, but I don't know I don't know if we've lost count as to how many investigations are ongoing and what they are likely to produce in terms of criminal outcome, indictments, etc. Let's get clear about the different probes that are ongoing right now into the Clintons and what they're supposed to be doing. Let's start with the FBI probe on the emails.
Okay, so the FBI probe into mishandling of classified information was originally opened, according to the FBI vault file materials, on the 10th of July, 2015. There's extensive documentation on the FBI vault file. You can see this for yourselves. If you go in just Google FBI vault, and then in quotes, Hillary R. Clinton, you will get to an 18-part, thousands of pages of evidence that anybody can read for him or herself, then you'll see what I'm talking about. So it's no question that the investigation was opened in July of 2015. So that's before the debate started. That's before the primary started. Somebody high up in the Obama administration, many people must have known that there was this investigation. It had been triggered when finally portions, the 30,940 emails, were delivered on the 5th of December 2014. After David Campbell, I think, their lawyer and others have been resisting turning over our property. That's what we got, a portion of our property. There was no independent government person, you know, checking to see what was work-related, what was potentially work-related. No. You know, the Clintons were allowed to do that themselves. They're, you know, people who did it for them. And that stuff went in. Very quickly thereafter, by February 2016, we learned that that of those 30,940 emails, 2,115 contained classified information. That was known at state by February 2016, and that was known by the FBI February 2016, exactly when McCabe is put in as deputy director of the FBI in charge of all these investigations. So, query, was the FBI management trying to bury the fact, the known fact, that Hillary Clinton indeed and her senior staff indeed did grossly mishandle 2,115 emails that contained classified information? Was that their real mission? And I submit to you that is what their real mission was. because at all costs, Hillary had to win. And so you have the original investigation into what was going on. Then after that, there's an investigation into the investigation that was what was is being led by a man called David Horowitz, who's the Inspector General for the Justice Department. And he tendered a report, I want to say either on the 12th or the 14th of January this year, that, you know, top people have, I assume it's classified, that goes into exactly all of this. You know, what was the investigation supposed to do? What did they actually do? And what are the problems with what actually happened? So there's that investigation. Then you also have Republicans so far in Congress solely, and it should be bipartisan, but Republicans beginning to say, we want an investigation of the investigation of the investigation. we don't have, you know. So that's just really on the mishandling, okay? On the question of the Clinton Foundation itself, we know from Cheryl Atkinson's book Smeared and from other reports that the field offices, four field offices of the FBI, were investigating during 2016 the Clinton Foundation for various reasons, both likely public corruption, you know, bribery, and also fraud, foundation fraud. But those investigations were sort of, you know, they were even more obstructed than the mishandling. They didn't have grand jury. They didn't have lots of financial resources. These were field office efforts. Whether they were coordinated or not, who knows? Why it took them so long, who knows? So we know that there were those two levels of investigation, mishandling and then foundation. We also know, thanks to Marsha Blackburn and her colleagues in the House who pushed and pushed and pushed, we know that finally, by July of 2016, there was an IRS investigation opened up into the Clinton Foundation for fraud, foundation fraud. Now, we're sitting here, it's February 2016, and I know the IRS people are busy. I know that Lois Lerner destroyed the tax-exempt department, and, you know, she really needs to be brought to account for her almost more than a decade-long pattern and practice of criminal behavior in the IRS. She really is the villain in this. So there's an IRS investigation ongoing, we're told, and there should be an investigation by whoever would do this. I don't know if it's the FBI or Congress or both, into, you know, what was really going on at the IRS, not simply with the Clinton Foundation, but and not simply going back to the election cycle of 15-16, but going all the way back to when Lois Lerner, you know, slithered into her office in July, I think, of 2001. You know, who knows how many other co-conspirators have been muddying the waters inside the IRS, weaponizing it, letting criminals escape by, you know, their charity frauds, and meanwhile, you know, targeting people like Corinne Brown for 5 years in federal prison for an $800,000 charity fraud. That's a whole area of unequal treatment under the law, the Constitution, particularly in this case, letting, you know, Caucasians off and imprisoning, you know, African-American females who's 71 years old. I mean, that's just outrageous behavior. And I would say the same thing if it were, you know, different political parties involved, different directions. You can't have, you know, the largest unprosecuted set of charity frauds in world history go merrily along where you then say, yeah, let's put this lady over here in prison for 5 years for $800,000. And the Clinton Foundation is more than $800,000 a day.
And it's been now, exactly where time. Does an investigation of Comey and others in the FBI, who were supposed to be investigating the Clinton Foundation, investigating these confidential and top secret memos that were flying around at will, who is investigating that? The role Comey played of pronouncing Hillary Clinton basically incapable of guilt even before he questioned her.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the Casablanca scene, right? I'm shocked there's gambling in the casino. I think what's happened is that Comey was in at the FBI for a short period, I think, what is it, 4 years, whereas Mueller was in for 12 years. And, of course, J. Edgar Hoover was in for decades. And, you know, we know from the example of the Clintons, you know, lifting hundreds of FBI files. Think of what a crooked head of the FBI could know about rivals and enemies. And if you're prepared to be a crook running the FBI, and I'm not saying Comey full out as a crook, but what I am saying is that his behavior needs to be explained under oath. He needs to be, you know, all the contradictions, all the things he's missed, all the potential conflicts of interest. Same for Mueller, same for Rosenstein, same for Wray. And if I'm leaving anybody out, you know, every single person who's been involved in this close group here that seems to have, you know, attempted to swung the election to Hillary, and then when that didn't work, when that didn't happen, potentially attempts to steal the election from Trump. This is serious stuff. You should not be allowed to, you know, to do anything close to what these people may well have done. And I don't know, you know, how one grapples with it. I mean, this should be, as in the case of Watergate, a bipartisan affair. But we see, you know, the politics are so poisoned in Washington, D.C., between the two parties. You know, it's difficult to imagine how the two parties could come together. But I think what is surprising, we see it in this our regular conversations and in other conversations I have on different media platforms. You know, I don't identify as a Republican. I don't identify as a Democrat. I don't understand why we really need political parties in 2018. We're all so well connected anyway by the internet, by social media, and other means. And I think good-hearted people across this country understand that charity fraud is despicable, corruption in government is despicable, unequal treatment before the law is despicable. Public corruption is, you know, all that we see. Getting rich, becoming worth hundreds of millions of dollars from a negative start when you're bankrupt, basically, you know, because of your service, government service, on its face is laughable. So good people across this country, we understand there's too much debt on the economy. There are too many ways that politically connected people can buy lenient treatment and get favors for making their contributions that they do. The Washington, D.C. is a swamp. Here I'm referring to the political apparatus in Washington, D.C., not its residents. And, you know, I think the American people is very much ready to try to clean it up. We may have different views on the role, the ways in which the economy ought to be operated or what our international priorities might be. But I think we're unified against this kind of bold-faced corruption, intimidation.
Charles, there's an issue here. I mean, and it's so glaring, it boggles the mind that it doesn't seem to cause a problem. The fact that we have people, two at least, who are at the center of the FBI investigation, Comey and Mueller, themselves having some questions to answer with regard to their activities and actions when they were in positions of power and authority of the FBI. And yet we have ongoing investigations headed by them. I mean, as compromised as they would appear to be. And the investigations continue as if this is not a problem. Is it, am I kind of losing it here that, you know, we have compromised people who themselves have questions to answer about conflicts of interest and about their possible roles in this whole debacle? And it doesn't seem to matter that, you know, these things need to be cleared up first, but they're given these pivotal roles to perform in the course of investigating wrongdoing, when the complaints we've heard so far would suggest they have their own explaining to do about their roles in the FBI and other investigations, where, I mean, any competent lawyer would be jumping up and down with joy with the idea that they're providing any number of legitimate claims of conflict of interest and compromise.
So the reason all along that I've been focused on the charity fraud aspects of this is because I hoped that we would get to this kind of place. And the public corruption elements of the case, the stuff where, you know, black bags of cash go to politicians in Switzerland or somewhere in secret named accounts and this and that, that's very tough to get. And obviously the people who may have been doing that really don't want to be exposed and are prepared to pay lawyers and others to try to slow you down from finding the truth. But in a charity fraud, once the switch is flipped, is tripped, as it has been in the case of the Clinton Foundation since July of 2016, the IRS and the Justice Department have very powerful levers to force a swift resolution to, exposing a charity fraud. When you go into a charity and say, listen, we suspect that you, the Clinton Foundation, have not been operating this, you've not either organized or operated lawfully, prove to us that you have. Then it falls upon, the burden falls on the Clinton Foundation to satisfy the IRS by showing them all the documents and any documents that they may have in their possession to demonstrate that they are organized and operated lawfully. And the defense of, we bleach bit our records, you go straight to jail for that one. I mean, you have to have the records. And I've been waiting and waiting and waiting, to get to be in a place where, many people in the public would be prepared to think about these sets of issues. Now I think it's safe to say, you ask people about the Clinton Foundation, perhaps the only people who will say that the Clinton Foundation's in good shape are, if she's old enough to talk now, Chelsea's daughter. Very few people with a functioning brain apparatus believe that the Clinton Foundation is anything other than the gross fraud that it is. And so the big questions now, the simplest way to get to the corruption is to go full speed ahead into the Clinton Foundation frauds, which is something that Peter Schweitzer, the famed author of Clinton Cash and the person who actually initially triggered my interest in studying this, he earlier this week gave a radio interview where he demanded that a grand jury be impaneled to go after the Clinton Foundation. He suggested in Little Rock, I think grand juries need to be in multiple places, not just Little Rock, but in many of the places where the Clinton Foundation has operated inside the United States, particularly in New York, also up in Massachusetts. There are other places where they've operated in Portland and Chicago and Dallas. It needs to be raided. And then any member of the public has an absolute right, this is the way it's set up in charity land, to see the entire correspondence file on a charity, because this is a public charity that's soliciting for money every day. And, the members of the public have to be able to gauge for themselves whether the charity is lawfully organized and operated. So the rules mandate that if you want to find out the entire correspondence file on a charity with the IRS, you're entitled to get a copy of it from the Clinton Foundation, which they refused to do, and which the IRS under Barack Obama refused to do as well. So that is very suspicious. And, you go down that trail, it shouldn't take more than, I would argue, a month at most. And you would have, if Corinne Brown's rotting in prison for 5 years, you would have all of the trustees, some of whom are very rich and billionaires, the professional advisors, the executives, Andrew Kessel, the chief financial officer, the former president, Skip Rutherford, many, many, many people could go to prison for decades. And you go down hard against them, and they will then cough up the information you need concerning to make your public corruption case. That's the way I would be doing it. And I'm not a lawyer, but, I do know the record, the public record, pretty well. And I just baffles me why, this hasn't cracked long ago.
Well, we will have to leave it there for today, Charles. I did ask you to walk us through the hell on Wall Street at the moment. We'll pick that up another day. I want to thank you again for keeping us in line with what is developing with the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation and related issues. Thanks so much for being with us today. And really, thanks so much for staying the course.
Thank you, Yatrice. Be well.
All right. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at Lead Stories, LEID, and stories, plural, one word, at gmail.com. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.
For a long time, run home for a long time, baby. Run home for a long time. Let me tell you, God Almighty is gonna cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go tell that midnight rider. Tell the gambler, rambler, backbiter. Tell him God Almighty's gonna cut him down. Stop, God Almighty, let me tell you the news. My